Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. I'm Ren Clayton with Sam Anderson and Nick Rudolph. Guys, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
Good. Pretty good.
Good. Good.
What's up? What have you guys been doing? What have you guys been watching in terms of sports?
Tons of NBA. Did you guys watch the Luka game winner yesterday against the Clippers?
So I didn't see it live. I saw like a video of the shot.
Man, Nick, did you see it?
No, I missed it too.
Oh my!
I just heard the stat line and things, so I haven't even seen the video.
You have to look it up. It's unbelievable. It was like definitely a "I'm here to stay" moment, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like he's definitely showing himself on the national stage in his second year, and like he could very well be like the next generational talent of the NBA, just based on what I've seen and what I've heard and stuff too. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems like that's what everyone says. Like, and it's kind of like I feel like we hear about him all the time, and he always like every other day he has another amazing like moment or something, and he's only in his second year. I feel like I've been hearing about him for longer, but I think it's just because he's like always been talked about ever since he was a rookie.
Oh, for sure. And yeah. Like, oh, sorry, Nick, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yeah, I agree. Like, everybody's talking highly of him. I feel like, not that I have watched a lot of him, so maybe this is wrong and you guys can correct me, but I feel like he's just more methodical about a lot of what he does. So it's not he's not the high jumper or like crazy athleticism type, at least that a lot of the NBA is showing, but you just like can't stop him at the same time.
Yeah, to me it reminds me of like a LeBron James, or like I guess from an older generation like a Magic Johnson, where he just like almost sees stuff before everyone else on the court does. And even though he's not like the most athletic guy out there, it's evident that he's like on a different playing field. And I was just talking to somebody earlier today about how he was like 18 years old or even younger, and he was like dominating the second best league in the world. And like, I guess two teams passed on him, but I guess three, because the Hawks traded their pick.
Yeah, that's right. Like that draft class, I mean, you can second guess every draft class, but like it's crazy when you look at it. It's him and Trae Young everyone talks about, but they weren't even the top two picks.
Right, yeah. DeAndre Ayton for the Suns and then Marvin Bagley for the Kings were the first two picks, and it's like, man, they have to be kicking themselves right now.
Definitely.
Pass on a talent like that. But yeah, so that's what I've been up to.
I just feel like Luka is like a star. Like he has everything. He's super clutch. He has personality, and he backs everything up. He's like super likable, and yeah, that's part of why like maybe he separates himself from other guys. A big part of the reason that is, I think, like the clutch things that he keeps coming up with.
Yeah, like not only is he incredibly confident, and you could see that in all the games that he plays, but then he backs it up by hitting a game winner in a big game in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but he did it like that stat line. What was it, like 43 points, mm-hmm. 16 boards, 10 rebounds, or whatever? He did that on like one ankle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Severely sprained ankle, too. So it's like, wow, this kid is amazing.
Yeah, I think I the thing I'm noticing more that I didn't know about him, or at least that is coming to full fruition, is how much of a fire he has, and mm-hmm. and he's just a competitor. Whether it's going from the sprained ankle aspect, or just the game winner aspect, or his beef with Montrezl Harrell, and just like he's just barking right back at him. It's cool to see that.
It really is.
The NBA playoffs continue to entertain us, I guess. Should we get into the documentary of the day? I didn't even mention what it was. Let's start talking about it. We're doing The U. It's one of the most popular 30 for 30 documentaries of all time, really. And I think we were all excited to watch this one. It's it was a long one. I think it went an hour 42 runtime, yeah, something like that. So directed by Billy Corbin, who's from the Miami area. It covers the University of Miami football program from 1983 through 91, which was kind of when they, you know, that 93 year was when they first kind of rose from, you know, relative anonymity. And then eventually in that, what, 10, I guess, 8 year span, they won 4 national championships. They were, you know, notorious, or, you know, I mean, they were one of the, maybe the best team in that decade. They were called the team of the 80s. So it just kind of talks about just chronologically how that all went down with recruiting in the Miami area, the South Florida area, getting a whole bunch of guys that had a very, you know, bad boy personality, and everything that came along with that. They document each and every of the 4 national championships in that time, and just kind of how the program came out of nowhere and was one of the best in that time period, and produced a ton of big stars, and continued to after that time frame as well. So, I mean, like I said, we were all excited to watch this. I should say it came out in first aired in 2009, December 2009. And there's actually a sequel that covers another era of University of Miami football after it, which we'll get to in many moons from now. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this one. It was just so fun. Pretty much that's what the word I would describe it is. It was super fun watch, a lot of great highlights, and I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't know, and like some of these names that like we could roll off. But guys, what was your first impression? Nick, what did you think when you watched it?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very quick run through on so many different years of the U football team, and just how good they were was very surprising to me. I had seen this documentary many years ago, so I didn't really remember a whole lot other than I know I really liked it from this first start. And so, like I turned it on and I was super pumped about it. And it starts with like a nice little introduction. And it was like, I just remember it being like slow music and just really peaceful and calm. And I'm like, wow, this sucks. Like it probably only played for like 10 seconds, but I was like, I hate this. Like, what was I thinking before? And then all of a sudden it just switched up into, you know, like the hip hop lyrics of like, you know, it's all about the U. And then I was like, oh, I immediately love this.
So. Yeah, that was a good little trick they played at the very start.
It was. I guess my takeaway is that I've always just associated like the U with the early 2000s run that they had. Yeah. And I had never seen this documentary. I had heard many great things about it, but I didn't realize that there was like 2 eras of the U. And so I guess that's another like learning point for me. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. Well, you had seen it already, but that was one of my main takeaways, is like, holy cow, the U had 2 amazing eras, which was interesting to me. And I guess one of the really cool takeaways that I enjoyed was them talking just about how they like almost revived or like created what Miami is today, and how like Miami wasn't really known as like a sports town, or it was really known, like at the time there was a ton of like race riots and stuff going on, and how like this one football team that proved to be super successful over 8 years ended up like helping the city come together in a way. And so what did you guys think about that, and did you know anything about that before this?
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up too. I'm glad you did. I didn't know anything about that before this. Obviously, it was well before we were born. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was so depressing how, you know, things haven't necessarily changed with just across the country. But that's kind of was my first impression, with the riots spurred by the same exact things that happened here and where we live. But yeah, it was near the end of the documentary. It talked about how, you know, there was all the race riots going on and that's what Miami was known for nationwide. And then after the 80s, when University of Miami became so famous, the football team did, they were known for the football team most of anything, more than the riots. So they kind of flipped that a little bit, and they went hand in hand with them recruiting these inner city guys from, they call it like the state of Miami, which is like the bottom, the south chunk of Florida, from these guys, from these neighborhoods, that a lot of the race riots are going on. They had tons of testimonials saying, yeah, this one guy that was shot by a cop was my like neighbor down the street, and then he was one of the football players on the team. And it was like all went exactly hand in hand. And I mean, it was that, and they talked about that really early on. So that was like a main theme of it. And I thought that was super interesting. Just another, you know, power of sports moment. Nick, what was your takeaway from that section?
Yeah, from that section, I loved that. Seeing the recruiting kind of strategy, I guess, that Schnellenberger,
yeah.
Is that how you that he had. I loved how they said, you know, nobody's came into, you know, our area, especially a white coach that, you know, wants us to play football. And the whole time going through it, when they were talking about the Miami State, talking about the strategy, and they wanted to, you know, basically set up a border, and like anybody south of, you know, or in the Miami State was going to be going to the U. And in them talking about it, it just made me think of like, that's the dream for, you know, like any college. That's like what I think most Minnesotan or Gopher fans have been, you know, dreaming of for like the longest time, because the whole, MO has been, well, we can't keep anybody in the state for football. We can't keep anybody in the state for basketball. And so like seeing this, I was like, oh, that's like the dream scenario. I feel like in college, it's cool to see your team succeed. But then if you have people that are actually from, you know, your states, or like for Miami, they're actually from Miami, like that makes it so much cooler. And so I didn't realize that there were so many people from Miami on the U teams as well. So it was cool to see that kind of different aspect of the team as well.
And they were saying during that part how, like, basically Howard Schnellenberger kind of started that trend, who was a coach of like, you know, winning your state, or if in their case, like the area. And then it said like everyone else across the country, college football programs basically picked up that strategy and still use it. And like, that's what, I mean, in the Midwest, that's obviously like a big emphasis. Nebraska, win your state, and then your region, and so on. But like, apparently that was kind of the start of at least how, like maybe the most successful start of it, of like winning your area.
And what an area. And what an area to focus on. They said that Miami is like the best spot for high school football in the country as far as producing like college football players. And I thought that was really interesting, because when I think of high school football, I always immediately think of like Texas, you know, which I know has a great program, but or a great history of football. But like Miami apparently is top notch as well. And like I can think of a few Vikings players now, like Dalvin Cook or like Teddy Bridgewater from back in the day, or from Miami. So, yeah, it was just interesting to hear how they got like the train rolling by just recruiting people within the city itself.
One of the cool, like, little anecdotes that they were talking about how it was just, you know, they couldn't even get five digits of fans in the stadium before that, before they got super good. Like, it was like, you know, I don't know, 9,000 people or something. It was like empty stadiums.
They could look up and see their mom, they said.
Yeah.
They could pick up their mom in the crowd.
And they had this deal with Burger King that if you bought a Whopper, that Burger King would give you a free ticket.
Yep.
And then these people would be like, yeah, we didn't even really want the ticket. We're just buying a burger. It was, yeah. So that's how bleak it really was. And then Coach Howard Schnellenberger was hired, and he was super successful. He was only there for a few years. He won a national champion. He won their first national championship with them,
and then he left the USFL, which we talked about a couple of the couple episodes ago. And I honestly, I was like so depressed when he left. When I saw that on the thing, I was like, "This is such a bummer." Like, he was the most well-liked dude. Everyone was like, "He's the most popular guy in Florida," and like, and there's so many interviews that said, "Yeah, if he had stayed and had a long run as their coach, like, he would have been one of the best or the best coach in college football of all time," which, you know, who knows? But, like, that's how good he was in, what, 3 years only or something?
Yep.
I think he was there from, what, 81 to 83 or something? I don't know.
I think that's right. That sounds right. But he wasn't there super long, but he really started this tradition. And then the man, Jimmy Johnson, steps up to the plate, becomes the second coach, and that was really cool to see, because that's like a name that all three of us are super familiar with, has played a huge role in, you know, the NFL, being with the Dallas Cowboys and stuff. But I guess I never really realized like how big of an impact he had on the University of Miami or college football in general.
Yeah, it's funny to see the young Jimmy Johnson.
Right.
Because, like, he has this white hair that he's known for nowadays on TV and stuff. And he's, like, still the same hair back then, but it's, like, not white. It's, like, brown or whatever. And he's still, like, the exact same dude. It sounded like he was super, like, confident. And then he, like, won over the team again. And it was just, they were super successful once more. 86 team. Vinny Testaverde was a Heisman Trophy winner. There's another name that we have heard many times. What did you guys think? I mean, obviously one of the main themes of this whole documentary was like the bad boys, like how they, they kind of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, whatever it is, the celebrations that were super boisterous and hilarious. And then all the off the field, like, you know, like trouble they got into. What was your impression of just how the documentary showed all that stuff?
I have a few things written down, like in quotations, as to how like the teams were described, that really caught my attention. Circus, Bug You, and Gangstas. And it was just really like eye-opening, I guess, as far as like how create, like, I'm struggling with words, I guess, but like how in your face the entire like team was. Like, basically they showed constant fights and you know, taunting and all that stuff. And I just thought to myself, like, wow, you never see that in today's NCAA. And like, part of that is because these teams were so in your face and, you know, so crazy at times that like the NCAA had to enforce rules later on because of them. And so I thought that was really, really cool to see. And they had so many good videos that were like, holy cow, how is that allowed?
Yeah.
Like, no wonder why college football is so popular, especially back then. It's like, how entertaining would it be to watch two teams like duke it out like that?
I know. What was the when they eventually the NCAA like made a rule about unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, what was that? I kind of forget. They were talking about like, they were, a lot of them were basically just straight from things that Miami did, right?
Yep. So that was in 1990, and if you guys remember, the first game of the season they lost to BYU in like a shocking game the year after they had won a national title. And so basically the season was shot because they had no chance at winning a national title. And so they ended up playing the University of Texas in the Cotton Bowl. And they were basically like, we're just going to go out here and destroy Texas, but also just like make it a mockery. Like, they had so many unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. I think they had 200 plus yards of
penalties. 202.
202 yards of penalties. And
Erickson went in at halftime. I think they had 150 at halftime, and they said that his halftime speech was, we need to clean this up a little bit.
And then it was that next year, that next off season, they were basically like, yep, we need to change the rules because of the University of Miami.
Yeah.
It was because the, you know, I'm sure it was big because the, it was the president? No, it was the athletic director that was just livid at the
I think
team
it was the school president, Demisers. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, in that, you know, that they were allowed to act like that out on the field, I guess. So, I don't know, crazy.
Yeah, and that was the third coach in that. At the time we're talking about in the early 90s, Dennis Erickson, after Jimmy Johnson left to go coach the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
So that was the third kind of era within this one era. And right. I remember one of the quotes about Erickson from one of the players was like, it was like the substitute teacher came in and everyone just kind of did whatever they wanted and got away with it. And that's kind of what it was with all those penalties and just like, this just crazy craziness that ensued. I mean, they won two national titles with Erickson, though, so it worked.
Right.
It's funny because I felt like they said that quote, and I was like, oh, you know, I kind of took it as a negative. And then it was like 30 seconds later, and then they were like, yeah, we want them to stay. You know, and they were like going to battle for him. So.
Oh, that's the thing. As a kid, you're excited when you get a substitute teacher because you can do whatever you want. And if you're winning games, you're getting good grades. Like, why do you need the regular teacher?
Sure.
Back, you know.
I know. So one thing I wanted to ask you guys is, so I was thinking about this as I was watching it, and there was like, I forget which it was. It might have been the Catholics versus Convicts game where. Notre Dame, because Notre Dame was one of the big rivalries, and Notre Dame made these T-shirts that said that said Catholics versus convicts, and because you know the U was always known for getting in trouble, and they both teams hated each other, and they were going to play. Correct me if I'm wrong for the national title, and they were the pre. Whatever, all this stuff happening before the days leading up, like the U was talking about it like it was a war. They came in dressed in fatigues off the plane. Mm-hmm. And that was like a big mm-hmm. coup in the media. And everyone was like kind of not too pleased with that. Like it was just, it was not, it was kind of just frowned upon. And then there was like more interaction with the teams in the, I don't know if it was like a dinner before the game or something like that. And then, like, one of the U players, like, he's like, we're leaving. He got up on the mic and was like, you know, the Japanese didn't hang out and eat dinner with people at Pearl Harbor before they bombed them. And then they left. And so I was just thinking about that. And it's like, obviously, that's not a great thing to say. And also, for many reasons. Number one is you're saying, like, you don't want to bring that up, especially it wasn't even that long ago at that time. I mean, it was, but it was less long than now. And then another thing is just stupid because, like, if you're saying you're the Japanese, you're on the losing side of World War II. So, like, what are you thinking?
That's a great point.
So, whatever. But also, so a question I want to ask is, would you guys have rooted for them if they were now, I guess, like in the 80s, if the 80s was the 2010s or whatever.
Yeah, I had the same question I wanted to ask you. Yeah,
oh,
so.
Man. So it's up to me then, huh?
I mean, so, okay, here, I'll give my thoughts what you guys think.
Yeah, give me
I'm
your
saying
thoughts.
I probably wouldn't have rooted for them as. If I was myself right now, I would have rooted for them. But if I was myself, like, when I was growing up as like a 12, 13 year old, I probably would have not rooted for them just because when I saw all those dumb penalties, that would have turned me off immediately. That would have been enough. And then there are some of the other things probably would have turned me off, but I still would have loved like the celebrations, the high stepping, whatever. Like I know one of those, the NCAA rules for unsportsmanlike conduct was, the new rules they put in that we referenced earlier was there's no changing the gait of your stride in celebration, which I've always hated that rule. Like you can't high step anymore in college football. It's the worst rule ever. Like yeah. You're just running. If the play's literally still going, it's so dumb.
Anyway, so I would have liked parts of it, but I think, but if I was like my, like, you know, tween self, I probably wouldn't have liked them. But I, if they were like happening like in 2020 and I was watching them, I would have loved almost like probably 98% of it.
So when you put it like that, I think I agree with you. I feel like teen me would have been influenced by like my grandpa or like mm-hmm. my brother or something, and they would have used the words that I said earlier, like, oh, what a circus out there, or like, thug you or whatever, you know, and I would have been like, oh yeah, that's bad to act like the way they're acting. But after like watching this documentary at this age, I feel like I'm like I was kind of like thrilled and excited about it, and like, wow, what a time it would have been to like be able to watch them on a consistent basis. And even though it's like it's craziness, like as a sports fan, that's exciting, you know. And so yeah, I would say I would have been a fan nowadays for sure.
Mm.
Because I think that's really cool. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I think same with you guys. I think initially I would not have, like as a kid, because I'm sure I would have been more of a purist or thinking they were chained, right? And so I don't know if I would have liked that as much, just knowing how I would, or thinking how I would have been, I guess. But I think that's what makes me love them so much more now. Because I can look back and watch this documentary and I just laugh at how ridiculous it is. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I probably wouldn't have liked them then, but now I have a greater appreciation for them because, like, it's hilarious. Like, the thoughts that they had or just, like, how they didn't care. And they just went out and did what they did and had fun in their way of having fun.
Right.
And I would have been probably turned off by some of the, criminal behavior or like that side of things, especially if that was, you know, reported on right away, things like that. But I think, you know, just being able to look back on it through this documentary is really fun.
Yeah, and so one of the things with that is it's a documentary, right? So something that I was thinking too when I was asking myself that question is that I'm hearing the perspective and context from the players in real time. Sure. As I'm watching them do the crazy outlandish things or say the crazy things. And so like and I'm automatically tend to root for that even more. So like
mm-hmm. that's a good point.
When you just get like little like, you know, segments of it over the course of a football season or three or four, then it's a little less fun for, I guess, and
sure.
funny and entertaining. But I mean, obviously it's just a little less, I would say. So that's just plays a factor, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like the fact that they're explaining to us like why they were acting that way, I feel like makes us all like root for them a little bit more, and like makes you wonder, you know, if it was in today's day and age, which it wouldn't happen today probably, but like people could use social media and like explain, hey, we're just having fun out here. And, you know, mm-hmm. maybe they'd be more likable because of that. Where like, they didn't really have that opportunity back in the 80s.
True. That's probably why it was more cut and dry with the, you know, haters. Like, you either hate them or you love them. It would probably be more in between people nowadays.
Right.
Anything else you want us to talk about before we talk about the kind of ending, which was the kind of scandal with the Two Live Crew and stuff? Anything like in the middle of the like decade?
I had one question that I had for you guys, or just like as they're going throughout all of their success. I think it was Notre Dame that they ran the score up on.
Yeah.
And I mean, one big part of this documentary, I loved seeing them just destroy Nebraska and destroy Texas. So that was great to look back on those days, back when those two teams were actually good. But what's your guys' take on running up a score in college football?
Sam?
All right. So I guess it's interesting because, like, we don't bat an eye when Oklahoma beats Tulsa 72-10, right? And like, yeah, it's like, oh, whatever, it's just another game. And like, literally, if you look at like the betting lines when like Alabama plays like Arkansas State or something ridiculous like that, it's like 52 points is the spread. And like, we don't bat an eye, but that like, that's the expectation, is that they're going to blow them out and not give them a chance. But then like, when a team like Miami is destroying Notre Dame, it's expected mm-hmm. that they're supposed to take the foot off the gas pedal. Like, I think that's kind of stupid. And like, just because they're a higher quality opponent doesn't mean that you should like not embarrass them, I guess. And so that mm-hmm. I just think that there's like a flaw in that logic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I guess part of the reasoning for these, like the Alabama versus Arkansas State, is that I think people think Alabama can't help it against those bad teams, and they just score so fast so early.
Sure.
So maybe that's their excuse, but I mean, come on. It's just the age-old argument against running up the score, against not running up the score or whatever. Like, the people who say you need to be nice is like, just be better, you know, just stop them if you don't want to get whooped. So I mean, it's as simple right. as that. There, and then, well, there's all these like other, you know, factors, like this Notre Dame backups. Game. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. The back, it's like, he put in his backups, at least that's what he said, and they're just good too. So what are you gonna do? Like, you can just run it, I guess, but I don't know. Like, you're playing Notre Dame. Like, if you can't stop the pass, I don't know. And then it was like the coach's last game of his career. Okay, I understand. Like, maybe if their coaches like were friends, but clearly Jimmy Johnson didn't care. So, I mean, I honestly have no problem with that. It gets a little more iffy if we go into like high school sports or youth sports. Like, youth sports, it's different. But it's also not different, because like, you're teaching the kids like to win and lose, and how to react to that and stuff like that, and you know, to work for what you get and to, you know, lose well and stuff like that. There, I've heard many times stories about in high school sports, basketball or football, you know, running up the score stories, and you know, there's everyone's super passionate on whichever side they fall, and it's always parents, and it's also like, just play better, and that's all I really have to say.
Nick, how many times in your basketball career did you get the score run up on?
Oh, far too many. Depends if we're talking youth or high school. Or...
I feel like I've heard a lot of those stories.
Yeah. Far too many that I've repressed in my brain, so thanks for bringing that up.
We resurfaced.
What is your opinion on the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking when I jotted this question down, I was just thinking, you know, college in that situation, and I think it was Jimmy Johnson at the time when like you guys were saying, and his point was, you know, these are my backups. You know, I can't, you know, it's my bad, I'm playing my backups. But that just made me think back to high school when you got a blowout, and then I think it's the dumbest thing in the world when you send your backups into the game, and then they're expected to just dribble out the clock and like get a shot clock violation.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. I think that's the dumbest thing, especially knowing, you know, in high school at least, like, I mean, college too. And I guess you could argue in the NBA, but all those guys are going to practice all the time, and like, they finally get out there, and that's like, they're gonna cherish those 2 minutes more than anything. So I don't know, whenever I see like the subs go in at the end of the game, like I hope they like go out and jack up a three. Like, I hope they play stupid basketball, like just enjoy it, because you know, that's like what it is. I mean, that's like your shot out there.
Right.
So I think the same thing is true, like, you know, as far as running up the score and things like that. Now, I think it's different in youth sports, like Ren was saying, you know, if you're continuing to play your starters or I think there can be a huge disparity in some, you know, youth sports, I guess. speaking from the bat on the poor side of things, you know, I got ran up the score a lot, or we did in high school or whatever, but youth sports can be a little more tricky, I guess I would say, or more I would lean towards maybe the middle of the side of the argument. But sure. I mean, in college, like, who cares? Like,
especially when it's two like prime time programs, I think.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah. Let's get to the kind of the ending of the documentary where they'd mentioned already that they're the rap group Two Live Crew. I forget the name of the head
Lucas Campbell.
Yeah, that sounds right. And he was friends with all the he's a Miami guy, friends with all the U players, and the kind of the as the movie was ending, they talked about how, you know, all this news broke, the scandal, him giving them money and part of it was just money for whatever, and then other times it was like money for a big hit or if you got an interception or forced a fumble or blah blah blah, and that went on for X amount of time, years or seasons or whatever. And so that was kind of it was a major ding on their reputation. They lost tons of football scholarships as punishment from the NCAA for a season. I think they, after that, or for that season, because of that, they decided not to play for a season. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. They just sat out the football season. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was like a major, bad thing for their program overall. Like, these guys were getting money on the side when the NCAA rules don't. I mean, we don't need to get into money, like, you know, paying the players, because that's will take another hour and a half. But that's just what happened. And then the documentary ends with just trying to kind of sum it all up with an uplifting note, how this has changed Miami in general, as we mentioned earlier, and how the kind of culture was created forever, and then, you know, all these other players came around after them. Michael Irvin, we forgot to mention him, but he was maybe the most famous, you know, guy in that era, the early 80s.
And he never even won a championship.
Oh, that, did he not win that first one?
I think it said that he was with the team from 84 to 87.
Oh.
So I didn't look this up, but I thought it was so funny because he was, like, the most outspoken. Like, we had to go back there and tell him what, you know, this is our crew. Like, this, you got to represent our family.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you never even won a championship.
Yeah, like, when they lost that BYU game, the first game of the season, yep, after the national championship, he was, like, just super angry at all the current players and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, overall, I liked it. Some of the issues I had with it was long, and I didn't feel like it had to be that long, just because there was a lot of the same thing over and over again. And obviously, that was kind of because there just simply was, but you can cut some of it down. So that was my main issue with it. Do you guys want to get into a rating? I can go first if you don't have anything else, just on the overall film.
Yeah, hit us with it, Ryan.
So just to continue, like, another issue I had is there was really no middle point. And, like, I mentioned before, like, a good story needs a beginning, a middle, and end. And it had a really good beginning. That was the best of those three. Like, you know, they didn't have anything. They were nobody. And then all of a sudden, they were somebody. And then the middle was a whole bunch of winning. But the middle was, like, the whole entire thing drawn out. It didn't really, you know, climb, like, to, like, a climax. Or, like, you know, like a bit, like a peaking moment or anything like that. Just because there was, like, four national championships included. And then the end was, you know, it was okay. It ended with a scandal and just talking about it, which I'm fine with. It's a documentary. That's literally how the events unfolded. I thought the original music was funny. They had literally songs, like one like rap song and another different song. Apparently the lyrics for both those were written by the director. I saw that in the credits. It was pretty funny. But overall, it showed just the power of sports. It was kind of rambling, as I mentioned. But so much good video and obviously tons of good interviews. I'm giving it 8.0 pipes because Howard Schnellenberger used to leave his pipe at really good recruits' houses when he left as a recruiting trick. So 8.0, I was going to give it higher, and then I was like, this wasn't quite as overwhelming as I thought it might maybe could have been, but it was super good. So 8 is my score. How about Nick? How about you?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I definitely get what you're saying as far as the kind of timeline or the beginning, middle, end sort of thing. It was kind of a weird ending just to quickly run through. It was like, oh yeah, we had like a decade of just dominance. And by the way, we had the scandal. And then at the end, oh yeah, like we also had to suffer for that for a little bit. And then we got through it. But it's all about the youth. So I felt like the ending was a little bit different. I speaking of the ending, I liked, or I found it funny how they were talking about Butch Davis, and they acted like he was the worst coach ever. Like he didn't know at all what he was doing. And then at the end, then they show that his record was 51-20.
Right. And they took like second.
So
weren't they second in the country or something his last year?
In his last year. And then the year after he left, they won the national championship again.
Right.
So I just found that to be funny. Stay tuned for part two, I guess. Yeah, I really liked it. It kept my attention the whole time. You know, it's pretty easy to keep my attention with all the craziness that was happening with that. So I really liked it. My favorite one so far. I'm going to give it 9 hip thrusts.
Wow.
Because I just think of that that one dancing. And the number one, I forget what player that was, but that's like the most iconic dance,
yes.
I guess, that was in the beginning intro and then the middle and probably at the end too. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
I've been practicing that one in the mirror ever since I watched that. So I really like this one too. Last week I was really down on Jimmy the Greek and just saying like that I thought it could have been like a 15 or 20 minute short documentary instead of like a 50 minute documentary. And this one, like, it was 1 hour and 40 minutes long, but I felt like they had enough material to cover that and more probably just,
mm-hmm.
and just like, you know, it was an 8-year window that they really talk about. And they have so much material, and I loved how they went through and they talked about, you know, Howard Schnellenberger and then Jimmy Johnson and then Dennis Erickson. And they kind of went through what each coach did well, what each of their flaws was, their big games, their big players, stuff like that. And so I liked the order of it. I get what Ren's saying. Like at some points I was like, wow, this is getting a little bit long, but at the same time, like there was enough that to keep my interest for a lot of it. Some awesome footage, some really great interviews. And so because of that, I'm going to give this one 9 fatigues. Because they wore fatigues or military uniforms on the plane to play Penn State. In the Fiesta Bowl, that was this right before the steak dinner that Ren described earlier. And so, yeah, we have 2 9s and an 8. So that's definitely our highest rated one so far.
Yeah, we really like this documentary, I guess. Okay, guys, let's go to our Mount Rushmore segment. We're going with sports celebrations. Going off of the hip thrusts, as Nick was talking about, there was a lot of good celebrations in this documentary that the U did and participated in. So that's what we're doing for our Mount Rushmore game. I think, Sam, you start. Who is your number one?
All right. I am glad to have the number one spot today because I have one celebration in mind that I think you guys probably have high on your list too, and that is the Tiger Woods fist pump. There's nothing more iconic than Tiger Woods wearing red on a Sunday in a big moment, and he throws his fist in the air after hitting like a 20-footer to secure a major win. that's one of the best moments I can remember as a kid, and one of the moments like I was most pumped for just watching it. So that's number one for me.
Yeah, that's a good one. It was definitely on my list too.
Mm-hmm. Good pick. All right, number two, I'm going to go with Michael Jordan in the Shrug. Just how awesome that was. You know, watching the documentary, I guess, is The Last Dance is my most recent time watching it. But just, you know, he could do no wrong. He could do nothing but put it in that. So, yeah.
Just an understated Shrug.
Right. That's one thing I've discovered is I really like the not excessive ones. Mm. Just the very subtle, like, hey guys, I'm the best. Although I guess I just picked Tiger Woods, which isn't very subtle, but I realize in general I like the more subtle ones.
Okay, well, you're not going to like mine then. I thought you guys would have taken this one off the board because to me this is legendary. Whenever I think of a great celebration, like a hilarious, super appropriate one, it's the Love Boat celebration by Steve Smith. When the Carolina Panthers receiver caught a long touchdown against the Vikings, it was the week after the Love Boat scandal with the Vikings and the strippers and everything that went on Lake Minnetonka, and it was like the talk of the NFL, and he catches a long touchdown, burns the Vikings, gets in the end zone, sits down, mimes like he's rowing a boat, looks back, rows faster, looks back, rows again, and it was just so funny. I was watching, I remember specifically watching that live and just dying laughing immediately. Just so funny. Steve Smith actually had a lot of good ones that I just watched today. He had some really funny ones, but that's, I mean, there's not much better, nothing, not in a celebration better than that, because it combined like funny, acted out well, planned well, and like really relevant to the like the time, the day, and stuff. So
that's right. My favorite. A nice dig on the Vikings for sure.
Yeah. Do I go again?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're up again.
Okay, so that one was really like irreverent, right? So my next one is like the opposite. It's Brandi Chastain, World Cup final. The penalty kick, takes off her jersey and like is one of the most iconic pictures in sports. Like that's actually like I looked it up like, and I had watched something on this before, but it was 1999 World Cup final against China, U.S. women's soccer team. She had the fifth penalty kick, the last one to clinch it. An overtime shootout, it went in obviously, and she like went down to her knees, took off her jersey, and just like was like had both arms out, and it was like there's like amazing photo of it, and mm-hmm. it was like New York Times called it like the most iconic picture of a woman in sports, and like that was like, I mean, it used to be that like the men would always take off their shirts after a goal as a major celebration, and the women never did, and it was like a super cool thing. And then eventually, like I guess going along with the theme, like the governing body said you couldn't, neither men or women could take off your shirt as a celebration anymore, but like anyway, that's just like an iconic super momentous celebration that I thought was super cool.
Definitely a big moment in U.S. sports history for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alrighty, Nick.
All right. I got to go with the moon, Randy Moss at Lambeau.
Oh.
Probably my favorite celly ever. Especially at Lambeau. That just makes it all the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can even consider that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, I love Joe Buck's call. He calls it like a disgusting act, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Oh, that is a disgusting act. He just seems so disappointed. And meanwhile, everybody in Minnesota is like, that's the best thing ever.
One of the best parts of that, too, is just like he has such a massive afro, which he like never had, really.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with another one that I think is awesome. the Dikembe Mutombo finger wave. After each block, Dikembe Mutombo put his index finger up and shook it back and forth, saying, like, no, 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 not today. And I think that is just such an awesome way of being like, I'm better than you at this sport. Get out of here.
That is iconic, too.
Yes. So that's number two for me. And then I'm
Have you seen that Geico commercial with him?
No, I have not.
It's Geico, I believe. I feel like Geico has all the funny commercials. But anyways, like, I don't know. It opens, and I think someone's, like, throwing away something in the trash, and then he's just sitting there, and he just whips it out. He's like, no, 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 not today. That was, like, my favorite commercial for a while.
One of the greatest voices in sports as well. All right. Number for my third pick, I'm going to go with the Terrell Owens Sharpie and his sock celebration. So he scores a touchdown. It's an awesome touchdown, probably like 40, 50 yards, and then proceeds to whip a Sharpie out of his sock out of nowhere, signs the ball, and throws it into the crowd. And I think that's pretty iconic.
That's amazing. I forgot about that one. There, Terrell Owens also was like had 1,000 good celebrations.
Yeah. He did. It was like him and Chad Ochocinco had like a competition for a while.
Yeah. That's true. Nick again.
I'm up, I believe. Yep. I'm going to go with Usain Bolt with the lightning bolt pose.
That's great. I didn't think of that.
That's just iconic, you know, like right next to the board that, or the scoreboard or timing board or whatever that, you know, has his finishing time after, you know, winning a gold medal, and he's got a, you know, the flag around him, and then just doing the bolt, lightning bolt pose. Mm-hmm. Just awesome.
That's a good one. Yeah. After he sets a world record as the fastest person on earth of all time.
Right.
That's great. I'm going to do for my number three pick, since Tiger Woods is off, I'm doing Deion Sanders, prime time, high stepping to the end zone, sure. Looking back at it, like kind of going back to that when I talked about how that rule is dumb. In the NFL, I think you can do it, and he's just high stepping after a pick six or during a pick six. So cool. I love it. And then my last pick is the Lambo leap. You guys think I'm not going to do the Lambo leap? It's iconic. You got, it's like every Packer, it's whenever they score their first touchdown, it's into the stands. And then obviously, basically whenever you score a touchdown, it's in the stands, and it's awesome. It's a tradition. It's cool.
It is cool.
A tradition like and no other. Okay. Let's see. My last pick here, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with craziness. There was that Icelandic soccer team that had a couple of, like, crazy celebrations after they scored a goal. Do you guys remember these at all?
No.
No? Okay. So they, like, so they had two that I can remember. They, like, lined up, and it was, like, a guy was casting a fishing pole, and then he caught, a fish, right? And so it's another player, and he, like, does basically the worm over as he's reeling it in. And then the other team, or his other teammates, like, pick up the fish or the other player, and then they, like, wheel it around or kind of just turn around, and then they have another guy that's there taking a picture.
Oh my gosh.
With the fish. And so so that one's hilarious. And then they also had like a toilet one too, where like the players you know, made a toilet, and then anyways, I like the fish one the best, so that's got to be my my last pick there.
That's awesome. Good.
I'm gonna look that up.
Yes,
that sounds like something that we've seen in the documentary we just watched about the U. man, this is a tough one. All right, I'm gonna go with Sammy Sosa hop.
Oh,
Yeah, when Sammy Sosa used to be one of my favorite players when I was a kid, and when he would hit a home run, you would know it because he would do like this little bunny hop afterwards, mm-hmm. sideways hop, and it was so cool. And I remember trying to always do it in like the yard as I hit home runs, which was rare.
Right.
But, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, I mean that's like the definition of an iconic celebration, right? Like when I think of, you know, like being a kid and then trying to do those celebrations, you know, this isn't really a celebration, but like Kevin Garnett, like throwing, or like LeBron James throwing up the chalk or whatever at the beginning of the game, or like the you know, taking your shirt off after you did something crazy, like that's another iconic one. Like MJ shrug is iconic. You know, like all of those things. That's mm-hmm. I don't know, cool when you know, just like we talked about, like yelling Kobe and throwing something in a trash can is iconic. It's cool when a celebration is that too.
For sure. Do you guys have any honorable mentions that you want to chat about quick?
Yes.
I feel like this is a fun one to talk about.
So one of my honorable mentions is Zay Jones a couple years ago. He did the Star Wars lightsaber battle, and then like he choked the guy with the Force like Darth Vader did.
I remember that.
That was with the Buffalo Bills. And then also I wanted to just shout out like high school hockey, like Minnesota high school hockey. Like I covered a couple like state tournaments here in the finals. Like I just remember like one when I was like right on ice level, and like Wayzata, like every school does this, but like the one I'm thinking of is Wayzata won, and they like, you know, they all just jump into the boards right in front of their student section and just pile on top of each other. It's just such a cool celebration. It's always the same whenever you win like a state tournament, but it's like super cool.
Oh yeah, and one that they'll never forget for sure.
Definitely. I got a couple Minnesota themes. Imagine that. Duck Duck Grey Duck, when the Vikings did that, was it two years ago or something?
Yeah,
I love that one.
Your first pick, Nick.
Yeah, and now I'm just sensitive because you guys call me out for my Minnesota fandom. So I just wait till honorable mention.
fair. That was a good one.
And then do you remember the, I think you guys are both Office fans, like when that wide receiver from the football team from Washington, to be politically correct, did the Michael Scarn dance?
Yeah.
That's right.
I remember seeing that and people were going crazy about it. And then I was like, I don't know. I don't really get that. And then I like found out that that's like what he did. And I'm like, that is awesome.
That's so specific. I love that.
And then the last one I had was just Sam Cassell doing the big marbles or like the big balls, you know, kind of shuffle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did that one as a kid a few times, I'm sure. I have a couple that come to mind. Do you guys remember Joe Horn from the Saints?
Yeah.
The wide receiver for the Saints. One time he scored a touchdown and he lifted up the field goal post and there was like a cell phone under it and he like made a call on it.
Oh yeah.
That one was cool. Chad Johnson's River Dance was incredible.
Yeah.
Yes. Very iconic. And then one that I thought about picking with my last pick because it's kind of unique is I thought that AI stepping over Ty Lue was kind of like a celebration.
Yeah.
When he hits that shot and then he just like casually steps over Ty Lue and is like, I own you, Ty Lue.
That's good too.
All right. So in summary here, I had the first pick. I went Tiger's fist pump, Mutombo's finger wave, T.O.'s Sharpie touchdown, and Sammy Sosa's hop. Nick had the MJ shrug, Randy Moss's moon, Usain Bolt's lightning pose, and the Icelandic soccer team's fish celebration. And then Ren had Steve Smith's love boat, Brandy Chastain's goal celebration, Deion Sanders' high stepping, and the Lambo leap.
These are all good, man.
Very good.
All right, let's keep it moving along, and we'll go to our documentary wish list, where we kind of discuss a documentary that we want made that hasn't been made, and each week one of us gives an idea. So I think, Nick, it's your turn just to give us your idea. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty quick. I think you guys will both like this one. I don't know if it's cheating because it's so easy, but we're recording this on 8/24, so it would be a disservice to Sports Everywhere if we didn't say Kobe Bryant's documentary, and especially with just the late Kobe Bryant, and it would have been cool to see, or it would be cool to see, just basically looking at his career. Obviously there would have to be something in there about, him as a father, and just like what he wanted to make out of his post-professional days. But it would have been cool to see, where he came from, in his early years in the NBA and going onward. I'm sure there's some sort of a documentary out there, but just, now that he's passed, it would be cool to see that, or that perspective of things, I guess.
That's a great idea. Yeah, like, it was crazy how he made that one movie, the short film, and won an Oscar. But yeah, no, another like a full on documentary about him, and would be just, it would be consumed so fast by sports fans.
Oh, right.
It would be really interesting, like the end of his life, the new career that he was starting, if they focused on that a little bit more too, because, from everything I've read and everything I've heard, like, his second career was going to almost be as good as his first one was. And like, that's such a rare thing for an athlete, especially of his caliber, to have like one of the greatest careers we've ever seen on the basketball court, but then to have people almost be more excited for what he's going to do off the court. And so it really is a shame, obviously, that was cut short. But it would really make an awesome documentary, like them talking about him winning the Oscar and him talking about, like, or people talking about, like, his pursuits in other aspects of his life as well, like being a dad and all that stuff too. So that would be a really, really good one.
Good call.
He was just about to turn 42. Was it like 47 birthday the other day? So
yeah, just the other day, I think.
Yeah. Dang.
8/24.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to our last segment now. Sam, what's next week? What can we look forward to?
Okay, so next week is episode 8 already. It's called Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. It is from March of 2010, so our first 2010 produced documentary, and it's, the summary is, the impact of Indiana Pacer Reggie Miller on the New York Knicks in the 1990s, specifically focusing on the Pacers-Knicks battles in the 1994 and 1995 NBA playoffs, and on Miller's interaction with Knicks fan Spike Lee. So it's going to be entertaining if Spike Lee's involved.
Definitely. Another exciting one to look forward to. This was fun, guys. The U's, our favorite one so far, just by the numbers, as Sam added it all up. Anything else before we say goodbye?
No, I don't think so. Keep hitting us up on social media. We've gotten some good responses lately, so keep that going.
Good questions, too. Would be good. We always like that input.
Absolutely. Make them tough, too. Make us think about them.
Make us prepare.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. We have finished 2009's section of 30 for 30s, and we're on to 2010. We're only, 10 years to catch up, so
yeah,
we're almost there. Follow us on social media, at DocDieHards on Instagram, and subscribe to our podcast where you listen to it. We will see you next week.